the subject of murders came up, and I said, you know, someone had to get murdered in Lake Placid, you know, in the last 10 years. Everyone is silent, like, no one is saying a word. We're all, like, aghast. Chocolate-covered bonbons, chocolate-covered ants, you know, all these things, and nothing, nothing. I'm like, truffles, truffles, truffles.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Hinken.
And I am Laura Wexler. And this week on the podcast, Prankster. We are devoting our entire episode to three tales from Stoop superfan Mike Resigliano.
Oh, my God. I love
this
guy.
Who is amazing. He's a cartoonist.
A sports cartoonist.
A sports cartoonist. Yes. A sports fan.
Oh, big fan.
And a
father. A father and a husband.
Yeah. And just all around funny.
Good guy.
Like, just lives life with a comic
everything
viewpoint.
About, yeah. Oh, my God.
And, so before we get started with all the prankster stories, we want to thank Park School of Baltimore, independent K-12 co-ed progressive school in Baltimore.
So all three of these stories are actually, Mike will just come to our all audience events, our second Stoops. He throws his name in. We're guaranteed to have a laugh when he does so. So this is the first one.
This was in summer. It was about nature, the great outdoors.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And yes. So this is about him on a hike dressed in a very
inappropriate gear.
Yeah.
We've gone up to the Adirondacks for many, many years in a row. I don't know, are the people here that visit the Adirondacks at all? Okay. So you'll be familiar with some of this. We've gone with friends for all these years. They've been such great hosts, and they put us up at their house, and a bunch of families get together. And we, over the years, we've had this kind of competition even. That was kind of like a decathlon of stupid events while we were up there. Like, we called it the Iron Crozick, named after our friends. And among those events was a game called Mountaintop Twister, where you had to climb the highest mountain in the Adirondacks, which is Mount Marcy, and play Twister on the top. My wife, Terry, is a gold medalist in this event. So, yes. And I'll give you one more of these things. So this event got in the local papers there, and a guy read about it, and he said, I've got a great event for you for next year. So he had a game called water jousting, where he actually had a trailer full of these gigantic platforms that had PVC pipes and a soccer ball on the top, and you would ride them on the lakes. They were, like, propelled with motors, and you'd go at each other and try to knock each other into the lakes. It was crazy. But my story is not about that. My story, that was an aside. My story is about the fact that one day while we were sitting at our host's house, we got into a conversation about murders in Lake Placid. Now, Lake Placid is a very small town in upstate New York. And the subject of murders came up, and I said, you know, someone had to get murdered in Lake Placid, you know, in the last 10 years. And she's like, no one ever gets murdered up here. I'm like, just a domestic dispute. Something had to happen. No. So the bet goes down that if I win and there was a murder, she's going to make me this awesome meal. She was a great cook. And if I lose, I have to hike in a dress. So we play around the golf the next day, and we go right to the police station. Oh, and she says, not only was there not a murder in the last 10 years, I'll bet there wasn't a murder in the last 20 years. So I'm like, bet's on. I'm winning this. We go to the police station after the golf thing. And the police people take the records out for Lake Placid. No murders in 25 years in Lake Placid. So the next day, I had to wear a dress. My son picked out the dress. It was a pink taffeta prom dress from the local place. And I had to hike the Marcy Trail, which is the busiest trail in Lake Placid wearing a pink taffeta prom dress. No one would hike near me. No one in our party would hike near me except one guy. And anywhere I hiked, people would just walk by me and say, "Lost a bet?" Yeah. That was it. That was my story.
Yeah, so that's not REI gear.
No. When he was telling the story, I had an image of Jamie Farr. Do you remember from Corporal Cleaner?
Yeah.
That's exactly what he looked like to me. Yeah.
Yep. Well done. So before we get to the next prankster story from Mike Risigliano, we want to thank Baltimore Magazine. You can find them on the newsstand at baltimoremagazine.com, and you can listen to Local Flavor Live, their food podcast.
We also want to thank the Golden West, which is on the Avenue in Hamden. They are a vegan-forward restaurant, totally delicious, been around since 1997, so they know what they're doing.
So this next story he shared at a show we recently did, the theme was catastrophe, and it is just a funny, just the hijinks of Mike Risigliano. What I like about all of his stories and just all of his humor is it's like it's not hating on people. It's not making people look bad.
Yeah.
Like there's something really clean cut and wholesome and just in a way come old fashioned about it. So take a listen.
I do a word camp every year, every summer. And a bunch of youth groups get together at a monastery on Park Heights Avenue, and we go into the inner city and we work on houses. It's an incredible week. It's a lot of fun. And we do a lot of activities at night, each night. And I run some of the activities, a trivia one and a scavenger hunt one that we've done for a number of years. And so finally, I turned the scavenger hunt duties over to somebody else, and I had that night off. So I had gone to get some stuff that I needed for work camp, and when I came back, the new people were doing the scavenger hunt. And I have to explain this. In the monastery, there's a group of paintings and photos of brothers in the monastery, a very kind of reverent area outside of the cafeteria. And we would pass these brothers, this like Hall of Fame of brothers in the monastery every day when we would go to breakfast and dinner in the monastery. When I got there, one of the scavenger hunt items was to count the brothers that had eyeglasses on their heads, and you had to put it on your sheet of paper. We've done that for years. And so when I got there, I'm just sitting there, and everyone's doing that, and they're counting the glasses, and I'm a goofball, and I'm sitting there, and I have a pair of glasses in my hand, and there's a roll of duct tape on the table. So as a joke, they've counted the eyeglasses, and I take my eyeglasses, and I put them on this large painting of the brother. And someone, one of the students actually says, "Risig, that seems very irreverent." And I said, "You know what, that's right." So I pulled the eyeglasses off, and with that came the forehead of the brother. And it's just there, and everyone is silent. Like, no one is saying a word. We're all, like, aghast. And I don't know what to say, you know, like... It's just this huge gash in this forehead of this guy, and we're staring at it. And so, I tell all the students, I said, "It is my fault. I'm going to tell the brother." So I go in, I confess the whole thing. I say, "It is my, the kids had nothing to do with it. I did this stupid thing, and I will pay for it." I didn't know at the time if it was a painting or a photo, or an old photo. I had no idea. I just said, so I contacted, like, photo retouchers, painting retouchers, anything that I could do to kind of repair this photo. It ended up being a photo that was there. And they never made me pay for it. And so I assumed that the next year, when I came back for work camp, like I do every year, this would be have been repaired and taken care of. Instead, there it was again, the giant guy with the gash in his forehead. And for every year, it's probably been the last 5 or 6 years that I've gone, he always stares me in the face. In fact, any time I would walk by him, I would be down, and my head would go down like this. So the last year, we left the monastery just a year ago. I took photos standing next to him as kind of a going away thing with him. And then we temporarily moved to Towson University, and one of the people actually took a photo of it, brought it to Towson University, where we relocated, had it framed and on our wall at the monastery, a constant reminder of my giant catastrophe. So,
yeah, so I love that, you know, when he's telling the story, he was trying to do volunteer work. He was trying to do good, and he really messed up.
Yeah.
and that, you know, his friends had his back and
his forehead.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then this last story, a story about competing on the $10,000 pyramid. So did you ever watch that show?
I did when I was like homesick. So, okay. Yeah, it was like that, Price is Right, I Love Lucy.
Yeah.
I do have Jeannie.
So $10,000 was the maximum you could earn on this pyramid. That
right.
seems like a little bit chintzy, doesn't
well,
it?
Well, you know, listen, it was a different era. Credit card was not, you know, as big of an issue. Many women couldn't even get credit cards during that time, right?
This was the 70s.
I think the women couldn't. Wait, when could women get credit cards? In the 60s, I think, is when they could get their own
credit card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm just saying $10,000 went a long way. That's what I'm trying to say.
You bought a lot of girdles with your female credit card, right? Okay, anyway, check it out.
Everyone here should be familiar with the game show $10,000 Pyramid. Anybody? Like, you know how the way you would play it would be like, I would give you a bunch of clues, and then you would come up with the category. So, for instance, if I were to say to you, a Ferris wheel, a Frisbee, a paper plate, things that are round, right? Very good, very good. So, Dick Clark hosted this game show, and I think I was a college student, and I was home visiting my family this one summer, and we all went into New York City to do sightseeing. And one of the things you could do in the city at the time was to watch one of these game shows. So we went in and watched this $10,000 pyramid game show, and at the end of the show, they counted off every 10th person in the audience, and that person could try out for the $10,000 pyramid show. And I was patted on the head. So I was like, wow, I get to try out for this $10,000 pyramid show. So I went into the city one day, and I'm put in this room with a bunch of other prospective contestants, and most of them were like middle-aged housewives and you know, a little bit older people than I was at the time, and they have you play the game. So I'm sitting there, and the one thing they told you beforehand was make sure that you show that you're an interesting person in addition to playing the game well, that's going to help you get on the game show. So I'm playing the game, and I'm telling you, I am doing great. Like, I am answering questions. I'm feeling so confident. I'm being lively, and I'm thinking to myself, I have got this made. I am going to be on the 10th. I'm going to be on there with Dick Clark one of these days and play this game show. Well, we've played several games now, and this is kind of the last round, and I'm teamed with this housewife, and the category is delicacies. And so I remember this well. So I'm there, and I'm like, you know, caviar, escargot, truffles. And the lady is looking at me with this blank stare, like, you know, and I'm like, escargot, truffles, chocolate-covered bonbons, chocolate-covered ants, you know, all these things, and nothing, nothing. And I'm like, truffles, truffles, and then kaboom, I hit the lady. Now, I am a very peaceful person. I have never hit anyone in my entire life before or after this moment. But at this moment, I somehow slugged this lady, this total stranger. And there was complete silence, like awkward, horrible silence as we're all just sitting there. And that was it. And then, you know, later they in essence said, you know, we'll call you, you know. and nothing, you know, of course, nothing ever transpired. But I just wanted to say I can't watch any time if I'm watching, like, the Game Show Network and the $10,000 Pyramid show comes on. I can only think of what could have been, you know, fabulous prizes and whatever. I think their concern was that I was going to, like, slug my celebrity like Joanne Worley or something and just clobber her that night. But that was my accident.
Fee, fee, fi, fi, fo, fo, fum. I smell smoke in the auditorium. Charlie Brown.
So there are three stories for ya from Mike Resigliano. He actually has another story that we didn't even choose for this about being a super sports fan and creating this big puppet kind mm-hmm. of thing. So if you're interested in more Mike Resigliano antics, you can check them out on our website. We want to thank The Wine Source at 3601 Elm Avenue in Hamden. We want to encourage you to visit stoopstorytelling.com, where you can find out about all of our antics. We don't do pranks, but we do have antics.
Yeah, we're anticky. And we want to also thank Maureen Harvey, who helps to edit down the antics. As
to a reasonable length, usually.
Thanks for listening. Have a good week.
Who, me?
Yeah, you! He walks in the classroom. Good.